Campus FM gli presenta Storia o Jet, le produzioni e presentazioni tra Emanuel Buttigieg e Liam Gauci.
Dr. Vaughn Olivia proudly received the constitutional instruments and displayed them to the people.
Combattenti! Terra! Mare dell'aria!
And unless it was possible to change Mr. Mintoff's mind, I do not believe that the facilities that he was prepared to grant would have been adequate, and therefore I don't think any defense agreement would have been possible.
The people of Malta have voted at the last general election, barely 4 months ago, for union with Britain.
Merħba lis-semija ta' Campus FM għal-programm ieħor Story o Jet miegħi Emanuel Buttigieg u Liam Gauci. Illum bippjaċir għandna żewġ mistiedna, Jennifer Porter u Dr. Chiara Pazian. It-tnejn li huma membri tad-Dipartiment tal-Konservazzjoni u Wirt Mibni fiħdan l-Università ta' Malta. Jennifer Porter hija restawratriċi li tispeċjalizza fuq pitturi li qegħdin mal-ħajt. Hija assistant lecturer u tiddariġi field project bħala parti mill-MSc in the Conservation of Decorative Architectural Surfaces. Mill-2007 l-hawn ħadmet ma' istituzzjonijiet varji madwar id-dinja fuq proġetti ta' restawr. Palissa tmexxi l-proġett ta' restawr tal-affreski ta' Matteo Perez da Lecco fiħdan il-Palazz tal-President il-Belt Valletta. Il-mistinna l-oħra, Dr. Chiara Pazian, hija konservatriċi tal-pittura mal-ħajt, lecturer u koordinatur tal-MSc in the Conservation of Decorative Architectural Surfaces. Hija segwit dottorat fil-Courtauld Institute of Art ta' Londra u kienet u għadha involuta f'diversi proġetti madwar l-Ewropa u l-Asja. Ma Jennifer u Chiara l-lum ser nkun qed nitkellmu dwar l-affreski ġewwa l-Palazz tal-President, qabel kien il-Palazz tal-Gran Mastru fil-Belt Valletta, li huri xeni mill-assedju l-kbir tal-1565 magħmula minn Perez da Lecco. Il-programm tal-lum ser ikun bl-Ingliż u nfakkarkom dejjem li tistgħu taraw ir-ritratti fuq il-paġna ta' Facebook tad-Dipartiment tal-Istorja u ta' Campus FM. So, Jennifer, Chiara, welcome on our program. It's a real pleasure to have you. And as I was saying to our listeners, we will be talking about what I think we can fairly call one of the treasures of this island, these beautiful, huge frescoes depicting what probably is, if not the most important event or the most known event in the history of these islands, that's certainly one of the best known, the Great Siege of 1565, and the frescoes were done by this artist, Perez da Lecco. What is amazing about you two is that you're actually working hands-on on these treasures to save them, to restore them, to bring them back to us. So, cutting the chase, why have you chosen to speak about this particular project, about these particular frescoes, and can you briefly describe them for our listeners?
Okay. We've chosen to speak about them today because the department has this ongoing project to conserve the paintings, which offers an unprecedented opportunity to study the paintings, both the materials but also their history. So we wanted to talk about this cycle because we have a lot of information about them at the moment. And to give you an introduction to them, I guess it's not, because they're wall paintings, they're not sort of an object, as you might think of an object normally, because they are part of the building, and they're not movable, they're integrated into their architectural context. And so that lends certain aspects to their sort of history that other objects might not have. So we're looking at the Great Siege Cycle, which is in the throne room in the Grand Master's Palace. The cycle covers the tops of all four walls of the throne room. And of course, it tells the story of the Great Siege from the beginning. So the first scene, it opens with the arrival of the Ottoman Armada in Malta, and then it closes with the departure of the fleet at the end of the siege. And the story is developed over 12 large narrative scenes, which are interspersed with allegorical figures, which relate to certain characteristics of the narrative scenes.
Uh-huh.
most of the visitors to the palace and most of our listeners would have walked into the throne room and looked at these frescoes from below.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
You're rather lucky. You're
yes,
looking
absolutely.
At the details.
Yes.
At the beauty.
Yeah.
How detailed are they?
Extremely detailed. That's one of the really, really remarkable things about these paintings is that, you know, they were created to be seen from floor level, so about 4 or 5 meters below. But when you get up close, there are tiny details, sort of figures that are maybe 3 centimeters high with full detailing
really?
Of armor, weaponry, etc. So, yeah, it's really amazing to be up close.
Can you give us some examples of these details?
Sure. Let's see. I think, for example, the armor that the figures are wearing. I don't know the technical language.
Yeah,
well,
don't worry. Don't worry. It's funny.
Putting my foot in my mouth. That's why I'm really.
Most obviously, you can see details of the armors. You can see the details of the ships coming in and
cannonry. So tiny cannons that are set up on the battlements of some of the cities. Where these sort of cannons are maybe 3 centimeters long again. What else? Fine detailing of the decorative elements of textiles, details of buildings in a village, churches, houses, other types of buildings.
There's a little devil as well, which you were talking about. How difficult is this work that you're doing?
Ooh. Difficult in what way?
In any way.
I guess difficult in the sense that it requires a lot of different bodies of information that normally would fall into different areas of specialization to be brought together and synthesized.
Mm-hmm.
So you have to have art historical information. You have to have information that normally would fall into the category of sort of material science. You know, we use information from the area of physics.
In fact, in the introduction, I described you, Jennifer, as a restorer, and you, Chiara, as a conservator.
Ah, no.
No, we're both.
We're both conservators, yeah.
Okay, all right. So, sorry about that. But when we talk of a restorer and conservator, what does that involve when you're working on something of that scale?
So, as Jennifer pointed out, a conservation project involves absolutely a team with different expertise. So conservators are the specialists who are always on site, on the scaffolding, but they closely work with chemists, for example, in order to analyze the original materials and have information on how to approach the conservation itself. We, of course, interface with art historians, curators, of course, have a big say in how the project is developed. And so that's absolutely a teamwork which is developed, in this case, over quite a long period of time, because, of course, the scale is huge, as Jennifer said, and it's rather complex. So we start from understanding the physical history of the object itself, and we're going to talk about that soon, I think, with you. And we try to understand what are the original materials and technique of the painting, what is the problem we're facing in terms of deterioration, is it active, is it not active, and how we can tackle it in order to indeed carry out the conservation.
In fact, I wanted to ask you, what have they gone through?
Yes, that I think we'll focus on that.
Yes,
because the story is actually very interesting, and we've recently spent a lot of time putting it together.
Let's start off then.
Okay. Yeah. So
we're talking about 500 years here, no?
Yes. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
I think we need a couple of programs.
Yes, I think we would have to, because so far we only have a slice from sort of the 19th century to the present, but there's definitely a lot more to look at as well. But yeah, an integral part of the conservation process, as Chiara's just said, is putting together the physical history of the object that we're looking to conserve. So when we say physical history, we mean sort of everything which has happened to the object, in this case, the wall paintings, since they were created. So we spend a lot of time looking into that and gathering that information together because it helps us to understand what we're seeing on the surface, the origins of some of the problems, some of the conservation issues that we're seeing, and also it helps us make conservation decisions. So what we should what problems we should tackle, if certain things we should leave alone, because of course they might have historic value. So that it's an essential element in the conservation process. So for these specific paintings, we've spent a lot of time doing the background research, and that of course starts with published information, because of course these paintings have been studied before us. So gathering information from previously published studies about the history, what has happened to the paintings over time. But then we also went into archival sources. So going into the National Archive of Malta, for example, the archives which are available at the National Museum of Archaeology as well. Mm-hmm. So looking in those types of sources for textual information, so written information about what's happened or been done to the paintings over time, but of course also looking at visual sources, so photographs, drawings, that kind of thing. And that involves things that were done directly to the paintings, but also changes to the room in general. But in addition to that, we spoke to conservators who worked on a project conserving these same paintings in the early 2000s. And they gave us access to their personal notes from the project, photographs from their process, which was really essential for understanding many aspects. And then, of course, we also combine all of that information with our own observations of the paintings, the examinations that we do of the surface of the paintings. Combine all of this and to help understand what we're seeing. And then finally, an interesting element with this particular scheme is that at the base of the paintings, there's a small wooden cornice, which seems to have been put in probably in the early 20th century.
Oh, right.
And yeah, a lot of material has collected behind it over the years. And so we've actually started excavating that material.
It's like an archaeological dig.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely, yeah. And we've already found a lot of really interesting elements in there, which are telling us a lot, mostly about the past restorations which have taken place in the painting. So things like a half-burnt cigarette. Oh, someone, gosh, a restorer who was up there smoking while doing the restoration. Bits of paper.
As you
were. Yeah.
As you do.
Yes, absolutely. Yes.
How's the smoking up there?
What's fascinating while listening to you is that, you know, I can imagine your hands are, in a sense, but the latest sets of hands.
Yes.
In a chain of sets of hands.
Since D'Alecchio.
Yeah, absolutely. Onward, yes.
Touched this, done things to it.
Yeah.
I mean, Liam works at a museum. I'm a historian. And I suppose a lot of people, when they go into stately homes and so on, tend to think that, you know, this is how the room must have always looked.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But in reality, people change things. I mean, just as we do in our house. Now we move things around. So this was someone's house. They needed to do things, perhaps not always in the most sensible ways. But and your work reveals this narrative. Yes.
Even the use of the room. This started.
Yes.
It was the Grand Council. Then there was a meridian line in it during the Derawan period. It became a ballroom. It hosted, even in recent history, with the throne room, thousands of tourists coming in. Then when it became a museum for functions, it kept on changing. But the one constant in all that were these frescoes.
Mm-hmm. Yes, absolutely.
Over there.
Yeah.
On that note, we'll stop for a brief musical interlude, but do stay with us, because I do believe there's a lot more fascinating stories that we are yet to hear.
Only for a moment, and the moment's gone.
So we're back for our second part of our program today. And Chiara, I would like to ask you a couple of questions. Before the break, we were talking about, you know, the change in use of the throne room, for want of a better word. What was the effect of these changes to the frescoes themselves?
Yeah, well, as Jennifer pointed out before, the room and the paintings themselves had quite a complex physical history. And indeed, the room changes function multiple times. Particularly in the British period, it was transformed in a ballroom. And the paintings for a long time, from 1818 until 1908, were covered with canvas and wood. And there were even installed on the walls semicolumns, neoclassical semicolumns.
Completely different room.
Completely different. And the paintings completely or partially concealed for a very long time, nearly 100 years.
Incredible.
Yeah. And so in this period, their historical significance and even aesthetical, I guess, was completely disregarded. In 1909, luckily, they were uncovered. And after that, a number of conservation restoration interventions followed. And that's definitely a sign of the fact that their significance was valued again.
Mm.
And interestingly, actually, going back before the British period, I wanted to point out that even in 1636, so just after about 50 years from the completion of the paintings, there were some modifications with some repaintings, which definitely showed that the site was hugely important to the order. Uh-huh. And we know this because we found a date, indeed 1636, on the feet of one of the allegories. And there is also the coat of arms of the Grand Master, the Grand Master at the time, who was Lascaris. And so that's an indication that definitely he wanted to be associated with the paintings.
That's
because they were important.
So it's like a little updating of some sort.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, and there were indeed many little or less little updating of the paintings, because during restorations they were also repainted very often, more or less heavily. So from 1901 until the 50s, 60s, there were multiple interventions, either removing previous overpaintings or adding others. And so it's
How close can we get to what D'Alecchio made, in fact? Or is it actually impossible to get to that layer because it's been covered up so many times or meddled with so many times?
From what we can see so far, we are estimating that about 80%, roughly 70 to 80% of the original D'Alecchio painting survives.
Okay.
Which is actually
good.
Yeah, it really is, given the complexity.
That gives us hope, yes.
Yeah. Uh-huh. And it's something, I mean, we're very happy to ascertain this, because when we started, we weren't quite sure how much of the original we would actually find. The complexity is that in some cases, in some areas, the original may have been completely removed by past interventions. And so it's not going to be possible in certain areas to recover the original.
You mentioned how the paintings were covered for almost 100 years in the British period. What does that do to a painting when it's covered up? Is it good? Is it bad? I mean, it's not seeing any light, which might be a good thing, but then I guess air circulation might be poor, which is bad.
Yeah, plus the cladding was put, obviously, very invasively on the painting themselves, because they needed to be nailed and holes were done on the paintings. So it was
literally
a massive shock, to the paintings. And we have actually very interesting historic pictures that Jennifer mentioned from when the panels and the canvases were removed. And so you can see really how much damage was done to the paintings.
So that was bad for them.
Very bad, yeah.
We're talking about the problems. In Malta, our flat roofs usually have a big problem with water seepage. Is this the case here as well?
And humidity.
And humidity.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, unfortunately, it's definitely the case. So we have evidence, physical evidence now, looking at the paintings and the marks that Walter Sippage left, but also evidence through documents and archive pictures that definitely there was an ongoing problem throughout the history of the paintings. So that created problems.
Our extremes with temperatures. Mm-hmm. Does that affect as well? So you've got our very hot summers, our very humid winters.
It certainly can. Okay. And many, many paintings are very adversely affected by that in Malta. With these paintings, we don't see so much evidence of them having been badly affected by that. And that is because of the technique with which they were painted. So they're more stable. It seems.
The allegorical figures that stand between the siege scenes. Are they contemporaneous? Were they done at the same time?
Yes.
Sometimes I've seen it said that maybe they were later additions.
No, they are actually. Yeah.
Uh-huh.
Yeah. They're definitely part of the original scheme. Uh-huh. Yeah.
Have they tended to be sort of greater victims to interventions in themselves than the siege scenes? I know the text at the bottom was changed from, was it Latin to Italian? I can't remember the order.
Yeah, certainly that has happened. The cartouches on the individual scenes as well have also been the focus of a lot of changes also. I don't think we've seen evidence so far that the allegories were treated any more roughly than the narrative scenes, though.
Okay.
I wouldn't say so.
Uh-huh. We are nearing the end of our interview. And before we go, I want both of you to think of us, you know, your favorite or your the ones that really, really captured your imagination or you love working on or studying about or looking at for that matter.
Paintings in general.
Yeah.
Or of the
Dallocchio, Dallocchio.
Okay. I particularly like some of the depictions of the Ottoman forces. There's some very sort of large-scale individual figures that are represented at the sort of the lower edges of the narrative scenes, and they're often quite handsome with fantastic mustaches and sort of beautiful flowing robes, and the representations are really quite elegant, and I enjoy looking at those.
Chiara?
I love particularly tiny details that probably just us being on the scaffolding can fully appreciate. So one of my favorites, it's a very small Ottoman Council of War. Yeah. Uh-huh. So they're all sitting around, probably planning the next movement. And I find amazing we can be so close to it.
Yeah, and that's a tiny detail that's maybe... It's tucked into a corner at the edge of one of the Ottoman tents, and it's maybe 10 centimeters by 5 centimeters.
It really looks like Dallocchio had a lot of fun to tiny details.
Amazing.
That is amazing. You know, what was he thinking when he knew that people won't be seeing all these details, but he was so passionate in actually getting all the details. And it's always amazing that he was actually asking the men and women who were there.
Absolutely.
So it's really a depiction, a contemporary depiction of
it's a kind of oral history on the walls.
Thinking about the process that must have been gone through to get that accurate of a depiction on the walls is really interesting, really fascinating.
And a bit like him, you're standing on scaffolding, he must have in order to do these paintings.
Yeah.
There's a lovely cyclicality to
this
story.
No candles, but electric lights.
No smoking.
But that's the 20s for you.
Yes.
At least that's not what we can say on the program.
On that note, once again, Jennifer, Chiara, thank you for accepting our invitation. It was an amazing interview.
Thanks for having us.
Thank you.
Thank you. For once again, it's Liam Gauci and Emanuel Buticic. We'll meet you next week.
Għadkom kemm smajtu Storja Oġġett, produzzjoni u prezentazzjoni ta' Emanuel Buticic flimkien ma' Liam Gauci.